Hi, everybody. It's Robbie and Garrett here. We just want to let you know that the SAG-AFTRA strike against the studios has happened. And we just wanted to assure everyone that this was recorded before the strike began. And we want to stress that we fully support SAG-AFTRA and the WGA in getting a fair contract.
Agreed.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Voyager actor, Garrett Wong, whose mother was once accepted to the Taiwan School of Drama when she was young, but decided not to go because of her father's objections. And myself, your favorite helmsman, Robert Duncan McNeil, aka RDM, Robbie McDunk, Robbie D. You can get the full version of this podcast. Don't forget, if you sign up to patreon.com/ the Delta Flyers, Garrett, tell me about your mom was interested in drama. I never knew this.
Oh my gosh. Okay. First of all, I just want to ask you, does anyone actually call you Robbie McDunk? Do you have any friends that say Robbie McDunk?
Really? Yeah, on the set of Chuck, yes, Josh, who played Morgan, Chuck's best friend, called McDunk, Robbie McDunk all the time.
All right. So there is somebody. Okay. Because there's nobody on the Voyager set that said Robbie McDunk to you. Everyone said Robbie, pretty much.
Yeah. I get Robbie D a lot. From Ethan Phillips. That came from him.
Yeah.
I get RDM a lot.
And I didn't know that you didn't like Dunkin' Donut. You don't like Robbie Dunkin' Donut McNeil.
I don't like, no. That was
no, because I wrote that on a piece of black tape and with the silver sharpener, I put it on your trailer, on your name once.
Yeah. It's trauma.
I apologize.
Trauma from my childhood being teased and bullied.
I should have known better. That was horrible of me.
Some mean boys that called me Dunkin' Donuts.
I hate that. Yeah. I hate that. Okay, let's get back to my mom.
Your mom.
Okay, so let me explain.
The Taiwan School of Drama.
So here, this is what happens, Robbie. In Taiwan, when you graduate from high school, you take a college entrance exam. Okay. Yes. The exam is similar to like an SAT or an ACT, what we take in the United States of America. You know, there's a math portion, there's all these different portions. But what's different from the SAT and the ACT is that this Taiwan college entrance exam test also has a section which sort of it weighs your creative abilities, your artistic side as well, right? So that's something that you don't see in the SAT and ACT. And then, depending on your scores, it's almost like
a placement exam, almost. They say it's like a placement exam. It's like you take the test and they say, okay, here's what you should do.
Right. So the guy that scores perfect on the math becomes the number one pick or the number one selection to the Taiwan School of Engineering. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it was almost like sports teams. Like depending on your performance on that test, you'd be first, second, third, fourth, fifth in the math, right? And they print this in the national newspaper.
Like they publish it?
They publish it so that everyone knows where everyone went to. So my mom is looking and she's looking and she didn't see her name anywhere. And then, you know, I think a brother or sister go, there's your name. And she was the number one pick to the Taiwan School of Drama.
Oh my God.
Number one. Not
Holy
like, you know, 15th,
crap.
But number
Had
one.
Had she done like, she plays and things like that before?
No, but she's always been like, I always say like my personality and how I am is very much her, you know, and you've met her in person. She can talk. You know what I'm saying? She can be a character.
Yeah.
She hadn't done any theater, anything like that. But this entrance exam basically focused on that part that focused on the artistic ability. She really outshone everybody else. And they were like, that's the one. And so she was kind of
excited.
She
could have been
like,
a star.
She could have been. And when she told me this story when I was younger, I said, so why didn't you do it, Mom? She said, my father, your grandfather said no. Absolutely not over my dead body, because in Chinese culture,
that's not
when it comes to, you know, respectability, occupations that you could choose. The number one, the most respected occupation is teacher or professor. So if you're an instructor or professor, you're the most respected in China over every other job.
Wow.
Okay. Then it keeps going down, 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 down. The bottom tier is merchant. So businessman is at the bottom tier. And wow. Then below, there's not even a rung below businessman. It's just the dirt. That's where actors reside in Chinese, you know, traditionally. So this is, you know, in my grandfather's mind, in the old Chinese way of thinking, this is not a respectable job. So he was like, no, you can't do this.
Well, what that reminds me of is when I lived in New York City and was in the theater community there, there was a club down off of kind of Midtown. Anyway, doesn't matter. Old part of New York City. There was a brownstone club called the Players Club. And I didn't know about this, but I went to an opening night party there one time at the Players Club, and you walk into this brownstone. They own the whole thing. And it's kind of like the Soho House or something, but it's been around since the early 1800s.
Wow.
And it was a club for theater people because hotels and restaurants and places
wouldn't allow them in. Theater,
wouldn't allow them. So if you were coming in to perform a play, you couldn't get a nice place to stay. So the Players Club created this place where you could have a great meal. You could rent a room upstairs. You could stay. You were welcome. You weren't treated like dirt. And that club, the Players Club, is still around in New York City.
Wow.
There's, you know, Edwin Booth and John Wilkes Booth, you know, posters or playbills are up on the wall, like really old school American actors.
I didn't know that there was that disrespect or discrimination against actors in this country as well. I had no clue. So
you couldn't go to a hotel if you were an actor. Yeah. They were like, nope, don't want you here.
Wow. So when she told me that Grandpa, you know, basically vetoed her going to this drama school, I still said, that's crazy. Like, why didn't you just say, no, set your foot down? And you could have gone and you would have been this huge megastar.
That would have been a family tradition.
Yes. Yeah. And she said, yes, but if I had done that, I would be married to Jackie Chan and you would not be here.
That's true.
I was like, okay, that is a valid point.
That's true.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, but isn't that funny that creative spark was passed down to you some way, genetically or whatever, and it expressed itself in your career and your life. So that's awesome.
Oh yeah. So yeah, thanks for bringing that up. That's a fun one to talk about. Yeah, most of the credits you brought up, I'm kind of embarrassed. I'm like, oh, not that one again. You know,
no, that's a cool.
This one's a good one to talk about.
Yeah,
it's
very cool.
All right. So this week's episode is. Yes. Homestead.
Yes. I think we're going to have a special guest with us.
We will have
to talk about this episode and the memories and reliving this episode. I'm really particularly excited about this one.
Okay. Well, let's go and watch this real quick. I know both of us have a general idea of what this is about, but we haven't seen the, you know, episode in many, many years. So the details and the B storylines, we don't know at all. So let's go watch this. Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. Okay, we are back, and guess what? We have none other than Ethan Phillips, or at least the voice of Ethan Phillips, joining us right now. We're
Thank
so
you,
happy.
Derek.
Yes.
I'm not as happy as you, but I'm happy. Yeah.
Okay, good.
You're always a combination of super happy and it's the end of the world.
Right.
It's like both of those things at once.
You know, an optimist is just a pessimist is just an optimist in possession of all the facts. You know what I'm saying?
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Words of wisdom.
Let's dive in because I want to hear your memories as we talk through this episode. What happened?
Halax pilgrims found. Neelix forced to take a stand. He stays with his own.
Ooh,
yes.
Very nice.
Very nice.
That could be one of Garrett's best haikus ever.
That's an excellent haiku.
It's a wonderful haiku. Robbie. Okay, listen.
Here comes
to
my limerick. My limerick for Homestead.
Yes.
To capture the entire pathos of this episode.
Yeah.
In a limerick. Here we go. We discover a Talaxian colony inside a big space rock. Neelix meets Dexa, and his heart starts to unlock. Happy ending chances? Zero. These guys really need a hero. We all say goodbye with a dance move from Tuvok. There you go.
Excellent.
There's my limerick.
I love it.
That's great. That's great, Robin. Yeah.
I think it encapsulates all of the pathos of the episode. There's our poetry synopsis.
Yes.
We cannot capture in a few words the entirety, but let's talk about the writer and director first. Writer Raph Green. Garrett and I guessed before we were wrong. We thought it was different writers. We were sure Ken Biller had his hands on this in some way.
No,
it's Raph Green is the writer.
Yeah,
right. And the director we were wrong on too.
It's LeVar Burton, wasn't it?
You're right. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was John Bruno for some reason. Garrett thought it was Alan Craker. This was LeVar Burton directed.
Yeah, because I remember he had one of the people that visited the set was Lawrence Fishburne, who was a pal of LeVar. So he was there for a couple of days.
What? Yeah. No. Yeah.
Wow.
Gosh, I wish I was there too that day.
Well, he was there, he came by for a couple of hours and hung out with LeVar in Video Village. And I got to talk to him briefly.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. Okay.
How cool. Now that you mention that, Ethan, I do remember Lawrence Fishburne being by the monitor because about it 2 years later, I directed a show called Eyes with Lawrence Fishburne's wife. And I said to her, I remember meeting your husband on the set of Star Trek, but I had forgotten about that. So, wow. Thank you for reminding me.
Yeah, sure.
So cool.
Yeah. Let's just jump right into it. We have Rob LaBelle, who we've had before. And I keep thinking, are the fans going to go, this is the same Talaxian we've seen multiple times on this show, but he plays different characters. He's Oxalon. He's Oxalon, the council member in this episode. You know, other than a couple of voiceovers he did in 87, 89, his real on-camera first credit is Quantum Leap, an episode of Quantum Leap in 1992. Mm-hmm. We also jump to the next individual on the guest star list is Julianne Christie, the lovely Julianne Christie who played Dexa. Her very, very first credit is the 1992 feature film Encino Man. Encino Man.
Funny. Yes. Brendan Fraser, right?
Yeah, Brendan Fraser. That's right. Yeah. Brendan Fraser in Encino Man. We also have Ian Meltzer, who played young little Brax, very first.
Oh, the little boy.
Yes, the little boy. The very first credit for Ian Meltzer is a 1998 episode of Touched by an Angel. Touched by an Angel. Yep.
Ian Meltzer, did you see if he continued as an adult or was he just a child actor?
No, he did. Well, he did a few more credits.
A little bit.
And then all of a sudden you see stuff for him in like art department. So he stayed in Hollywood.
Oh, interesting.
He jumped into other. Exactly. All right. Co-stars. John Kenton Schull, who played Nakona. He's the head miner. The guy that's sort of, our heavy, our evil, our person.
Yes, the blockheaded guys.
The blockheaded guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. His very first credit was a 1981 episode of Fantasy Island with Mr. Rourke. So that was his very first credit. But he was also, Robbie, he was the medicine man in season 3 opener, Basics Part 2. So he was he was that guy. He was also Brooke Don in the season 6 episode, Barge of the Dead. So
he's
Klingon
been on
guy.
Our show a few times.
Yeah, this is his third time on our show. Wow. We also have another co-star, Christian R. Conrad. That's the right-hand man to Nakona, a minor. 1984 TV movie Hard Knocks was his first credit.
Not a bad movie.
Yeah, he also did one episode of DS9 in 1997, and he also worked on Voyager. He played the role of Dunbar in Future's End and Future's End Part 2.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think that might have been Begley Jr.'s, guy.
Sidekick or something.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. So there you go. That's our.
Interesting. There's our cast.
They used the same people over and over again a lot, didn't they?
They did. Yeah. It's easier, right? I mean, if you're Ron Surma and you need somebody quick, you can call up in a speed dial. You know who you want. So.
Exactly.
I have a question before we get into the plot of the episode, talking about guest stars. Ethan, Julianne Christie, who played Dexa, your love interest in this, was wonderful, just wonderful story. What are your memories about working with her?
I thought she was really a sweet lady. I remember being really sweet and kind and very excited about being there. She looked very good in the makeup, which was interesting.
Yeah. I was wondering about that because you were pretty much one of the only actors that ever had to put on Talaxian makeup. It was a big process.
It's a big process. And it's interesting because of Mike Westmore. Everybody who did wear it, their personality came through the makeup. in spite of the fact that there was so much rubber and glue up there,
yeah,
he allowed the chin and the mouth to be free. I don't know how he did it. Well, he did the, you know, when they did the set, yeah, they cast it in the cement. So he captured their facial, you know, main points anyway. But it's just the way that the individual pops through that makeup. Unlike with Ferengis, where it's, you know, they're Ferengis. But the Neelix makeup allowed individuality.
Yeah, it allowed a lot of expression. I also love what he did with all these Talaxians. It wasn't the exact same makeup on everyone.
Right.
Like Dexa didn't have any facial hair.
And they might change the temple. The color in the temples was yellow for me, but they could change it a little.
Mm-hmm. They changed a little. All the hair.
All the hair was
similar,
different colors,
but very, very specific, different colors. Mm-hmm. And then Rob LaBelle's character, Oxalon, he must have been older because his beard came down like along his neck, whereas your tufts were much smaller, which I interpreted as Neelix is younger than I thought. He's compared to Rob LaBelle's character, who must be an older, he's got this long beard.
So we start out in the mess hall. We have a close-up on a vintage jukebox. Camera pulls back to reveal it's a party. First contact day party. Zefram Cochrane's favorite dish, cheese pierogies. Chakotay arrives to inform Janeway and Neelix that long-range sensors have detected hundreds of life forms 4.9 light years away. Guess what? They're Talaxian. Dun, dun, dun.
It's a great scene. Do you remember that big party scene where you were passing food and talking to everybody?
Yeah,
I was pretty garrulous, if I remember correctly.
You were. In this scene, what the things I loved about it, first of all, the Steadicam work, just moving around the entire room was beautiful. Mm-hmm. LeVar did a great job of keeping it moving and and giving it energy in this opening scene.
Yeah, yeah.
I love the idea that you and Naomi Wildman had come up with this celebration for First Contact Day. It's not a typical thing, but it was Neelix and Naomi's interpretation of this holiday.
Right.
And Tuvok was not interested at all. In fact, near the end of the scene, before you get the news, you turn on some music and you started dancing.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. You know, you're doing this silly dance to the song. There must have been playback in the set when we were, because you were dancing to the song. You had choreographed some moves.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, come on, Mr. Tuvok, Mr. Vulcan, come on and dance with me. And he does not want
to
dance.
And they set that up right in the beginning of that to be able to have that call back later on. It was wonderful.
Exactly.
Yeah, because they show you dancing, the camera pans down to your feet. And that's when you do that little waggle with your foot as the setup for later. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Good scene.
It's the same move. The only thing in that scene I wish, as I rewatched it, is when you play the music and you start dancing. I wish everyone had danced a little bit except for Tuvok. I wish, because it almost looked like Neelix was performing for everybody as opposed to Neelix is doing it and everybody in the room starts joining in, dancing or moving a little, and Tuvok is just not. To me, that would have been even stronger.
In retrospect.
Mm-hmm. First of all, we have an exterior space shot of Voyager. Then we jump to the bridge and Neelix comes on through the turbo lift. And boy, is he excited and nervous about meeting his own kind. They've been hailed, but no response yet. Voyager is way too big to go into this asteroid field where we're getting the readings of these Talaxians. So Paris suggests taking the Delta Flyer.
We can't take the big ship in there because there's literally thousands of asteroids. It's packed with all these rocks. So Tom says, hey, let's take the flyer in. I just want to insert this bridge scene.
Mm-hmm.
I remember filming this with my home movie camera. And I looked at it recently and I was goofing off so much in this video during rehearsals. Kate even was looking at me like she said something like, what are you doing, Rob?
Yeah.
Like, because I must have had a brand new camera and I was testing it out.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, I was the worst behaved actor.
Robbie, as you know, this story set up allowed us to start f-ing around. It was like the second week of filming. And he asked, and he had a line to me. He said, Neelix, hand me the pad. And you know how they were spelled P-A-D-D. And Robbie went, while he was filming, Neelix, hand me the pad. And he pronounced the second D. And he had this glint in his eye. And I caught that glint. I said, this guy, McNeil, wants to f*** around. Well, I'm up for that because I love to f*** around.
Robbie started it.
I didn't know that I started it, but I'm not surprised after looking at that home video of this scene on the bridge. I was like, now as a producer and director, if the actors behave like that, I would be like, hold on.
Yeah.
We're working right now. Let's have fun, but we got to keep, you know.
Okay.
But nobody said anything. I was watching it. And nobody said it.
Robbie, I think you're a little critical saying you were so misbehaved, but I would say that you were very cavalier with that new camera, the way you were talking. It almost seemed like you were the showrunner, is what it seemed like. You were like, hey, guys, here's my camera. This is my show. Let me go ahead and record everybody. It was very fun.
Yeah, and everybody knew you were having fun, and it was my last. Nobody's going to.
It was your last episode. I wanted to. It was awesome. Anyway, I just recently saw that. We had a lot of fun and we were enjoying each other's company. And as I rewatched this episode, that moved me a lot.
We're in the Delta Flyer interior because Paris had just suggested to take the flyer. And we have Neelix, Tuvok, and Paris on this away mission into the asteroid field. Neelix gives Tuvok heck for not even trying to dance. He says he's gonna get him to dance before they get back to Earth. He says that Tuvok was afraid. Tuvok denies this.
They start to get into a little bit of a tiff, and Paris is like, hey, you guys, am I going to have to separate you? And I felt like when I said that line, my reading was almost like to Ethan and Tim Russ going, hey, guys, speaking of goofing off, Ethan, you and Tim
goofed off constantly.
Yeah. That felt very, very real. My line delivery of, if you two don't stop, I'm going to come back there and separate you. Right. Felt like I could have said that 1,000 times.
Yeah. Did we go over to stage 16 then? We must have gone to stage 16.
The flyer?
Probably to film the flyer. Yeah, yep. I would think so.
That is correct. Yeah. Tuvok does detect that life signs are coming from inside a large asteroid, which is a little surprising. And then all of a sudden, the shuttle experiences this huge shake, which was caused by a thermalite explosion. And actually, a few more explosions happen. And one of them sort of blows part of an asteroid to pieces. And I'm guessing the debris from that asteroid hits the flyer. Is that what causes the flyer to lose everything?
It was not clear at this point in the story whether someone was firing weapons or if these were like... Mm-hmm. mines left
We don't know
but they were blowing up the rocks. I love the shot in space where the flyer is like trying to avoid these rocks, the asteroids breaking apart. Tuvok says the closest place to make an emergency landing is actually, Paris says it, the closest place is the Talaxian's asteroid that's nearby. That's the best place to go be safe. We're going to go to the Talaxian's asteroid.
Serendipitous. Yes.
Yeah.
Very serendipitous.
Robbie, did you like that scene of the actual crash landing? Because I don't know. I mean, to me, it looked very much like an anime. It looked anime to me. It looked animated. It didn't look real live action to me.
Yeah, it was. There were a few different angles, and some angles worked better than others. I think the wide angle from the side when the shuttle first hits was kind of cartoony, but then there was another angle where it's coming right at the camera. But it was a nice sequence. We don't normally do that. And you know what we discovered, Ethan? In this podcast, we discovered that we talked to one of the visual effects artists who was involved in the CGI that was being incorporated. Mm-hmm. And they hadn't used much CGI on our show. So there was a lot of stuff that we just talked about that they wouldn't show because it was too expensive or they didn't think it was good enough. And this is the season where they convinced Rick Berman and the producers to try more CGI because it was more affordable. And so this is one of those sequences. This crash to me is clearly we're starting to use more CGI. We're cutting to multiple angles of this crash. They're doing things.
It's the penultimate show.
You know,
I mean, they used it for those monsters, right? Those the monsters that had the initials for a name or number for a name.
Species 8472.
That was all CGI.
Yeah,
those were all CGI, but they didn't. It was very expensive back in the 90s, and the quality was hit or miss sometimes. Yeah. But this is the season, and this is a moment I just want to point out where I think they were going all in on the CGI, and it was a mixed success. I agree with you, Garrett.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, we jump over to Astrometrics, and Janeway walks in. She asks Seven, is there a problem? Seven says, we've lost contact with the away team. We can't really scan in there. There's a lot of interference. So Janeway needs another team to go in there, a rescue team, yeah. Basically. So they have to modify the shields. Yeah, to rescue all of you three. We're now this is Dexa's house or place or quarters.
This is when you wake up.
Yeah.
When you wake up in for the first time with an other Talaxian, and she's got a medical scanner.
I remember
And you wake up and she says, stay calm, don't worry, you're gonna be okay.
Yeah.
And you immediately ask about your friends. And that really touched me because again, everything in this episode to me as I rewatched it was seen through the filter of this was Ethan's last episode with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so all of these moments when you say, where are my friends? Where are they? Wow. I want to see my friends.
You got emotional. Like, it hit your heartstrings.
Yeah. It did.
Yeah. But we learned a little bit more. The explosions were not caused by the Talaxians because Neelix wonders, you know, did someone fire at them? And was it the Talaxians? He's like, no. And they were miners. So we now know miners are using explosive charges. And this is also the scene that we're introduced to Brax. Brax sort of, goes
little
against
boy,
his
the
mother's
little,
orders.
The little kid. Yeah.
Little kid.
And he's like, 7 years old, if I remember correctly.
Something
seven,
like that. I would guess seven
he's
to
young.
10.
He's definitely young. Yeah. Brax is scolded by Dexa. Dexa said, look, I told you not to come in here. And he just wants to see the newest Talaxian to this colony, which is Neelix. Right. And so basically this whole conversation is about Neelix convincing Dexa that, look, we're not a threat. We're not here to sort of ruin your party. So,
right.
I have a question, Garrett, in this scene.
Yeah.
I noticed right away Dexa, the Talaxian who becomes your love interest, had a costume on that looked a lot like Kes. It was the same colors. It was material. Seriously, I thought it was the same. It had the long sleeve, like the sleeves underneath the over thing. It was sort of that rust color.
Do that on purpose?
Yeah, I think so. Yes, that's a really great. That's a great catch, Robbie.
When I made the connection of the same style and color combination as Kes, I was like, wow, these are the things that like Bob Blackman and Mike Westmore and everybody, they'll put in these connections that we don't even.
We're not even
sometimes
aware of.
We're not even aware of.
Nope.
I thought it was brilliant. So
yeah.
So collaborative. Everything was just so collaborative.
Mm.
Beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful to hear that.
So what were your memories of dealing or acting with the young boy?
Well, I remember always with children and animals, you have to be good on every take because they're going to take the take that the kid or the dog was good on.
Mm.
So I was aware of that. I really had to, they had to nail it each time. Also, just, part of me observing children acting, who they do it, they act normally in their life. They play all the time. Mm-hmm. And here they are now having to play professionally.
Yeah.
and watching their choices and stuff. And I remember the kid was a nice little kid. The memory I have most of any child is that little girl, the very first little Wildman.
Before Scarlett Palmer's came in.
Before Scarlett. I remember her real well because of a number of reasons. One being that I tried to improvise in that scene. I don't know if I told you this story.
No.
I was coming to tuck her into bed, and she was a young child. I think she was like
She was young. Yeah, 4 or 5, or maybe. She was
just
really
past
young.
Being a toddler. I had a line where I tuck her in and I hold up her teddy bear, which is called a targ. Targ. And I go, "Good night, Mr. Targ." And as I said it during the filming, I went, "Good night, Mr. Targ, sir." And Cosmo goes, "There's no sir." And I went, "Oh, do you want to add a sir?" I said, "Yeah, I think it's cute." "Okay, hang on." And they had to call the writer's building. Yeah. And it took like 20 minutes. And I'm in, I don't need an extra 20 minutes of that makeup any day of the week. And they allowed me to say, "Good night, Mr. Targ, sir." But I never improvised again. And that was the first year. And I don't want to wait around for them to go, "Yeah, he can add a butt."
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I want to say one thing, piggyback on what you said, Ethan, about how you worked with kids differently. I saw that in this episode.
Did you?
I did. I saw, you've got a scene later with Brax where it's just the two of you.
What did you see?
The authenticity and the presence that you had in a way with kids. You're so good with kids. You're so good because they feed you something. And I didn't know it's what you're talking about, that kind of the way that you work with them. But it's really good. It brings out great stuff in the character, but also in your performance, that playfulness.
I just did this incredible play reading out in Los Angeles last week. And I hadn't done anything large like that in quite a while, several years, where I was the lead and I, theater-wise.
Yeah.
And it was a very tricky monster of a play with a very, very powerful message. Basically, Chekhov's message, an unexamined life is not worth living. It's about a man who's been living a lie his whole life, and at the end of the play, finally accepts the fact that he'd been lying. I realized again, and I always realize this over, I'm not going to talk to the character. I'm not going to talk. I'm going to talk to the actor. So if I have a line, he had a line in this play, "You loved me," to his wife, and I don't say it to the character she's playing. I'm saying it to the actress.
Yeah.
And that's what you always have to do. You have to talk to the human being there, and because that's all it is, you know. And and kids make it easier to do that, because I don't know what it is about kids that they respond right away to that.
Yeah.
You know, and they fall into it. They don't have a lot of protective tricks and mannerisms that they developed as actors over the years, you know.
Yeah, you see it in this episode for Thank sure. You really Thank you. Do. Well, this scene ends with Neelix. Basically, Dexa puts up a force field and he's trapped in this room, in this bedroom. Basically, you're jailed. You're in the brig. And that's our act out. So nice first scene. We go to the bridge next. Janeway is looking for her team. Ask Harry. No response there. And then Harry says there's a ship approaching. We're being hailed. This man comes up on screen. It looks like some kind of Hulk-type Marvel superhero to me. The makeup was like Blockhead.
These are the
do you remember those guys?
Segmented. Yeah. It wasn't really blocky, like a square. It's just a round.
It was very interesting.
A bunch of lines on there, and it almost looked like their face was part of a helmet in a way. You know, it didn't seem like it was actually organic tissue. It was like, what's going on here? Yeah,
yeah. They looked like stone, like they were made of rock or something.
Yeah, it's such a cool look.
Yeah, it was very cool.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, Janeway says our people are, you know, lost on somewhere in this asteroid field. We need to look for him. He's like, no way. This is our asteroid field. We've got quotas to make. We were mining this place. You cannot go in there. We'll look for you.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, there's mining charges setting off all over the place. It's not safe. We kind of know he doesn't seem like a bad guy, but he's pretty firm about this.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the last line of this scene is him saying, look, I can't guarantee your safety if you go in there. So just stay where you're at. Stay put. We will contact you when we find your people. So he seems like a good guy. Like he's like, okay, we'll help you out. Right.
Right.
And one of my favorite shots in this episode is at the end of this scene where it's on Janeway in the foreground. She looks back to Harry and Chakotay, Rax focus. Everybody's, you know, you can feel the concern, and then back to her face in the foreground. It was a beautiful shot. Well done, LeVar. Nice ending for the scene.
Nice.
We go back to Dex's quarters again. Neelix is there. And this is the scene I was talking about with Brax, the little kid.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're just telling him where you're from, and you know, that you're from the ship you're from is called Voyager, and you're very proud of it. And it's a nice scene.
Right. And but you get him to laugh. He's holding like a ship, right? So, or something. And basically you say, oh, is that a model ship? What is it called? The two-tailed Talchuk or the fur fly? So you bring in, you know, Talaxian references, and he kind of like, he starts laughing. So this is the point where he starts to ease
the bonding
up a little bit.
It's a bonding scene. Yeah.
Definitely.
Beautifully played. And and then his mom, he hears his mom coming in. He's like, oh, I'm going to be in trouble. Neelix is like, I gotcha. I'll cover for you.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell on you. Yeah, go hide.
That's great.
So you immediately are making major brownie points right now with the kid, at least, for sure.
Neelix was a good guy.
Yeah.
He was a very good guy.
Mm-hmm.
Dexa comes in with Rob LaBelle.
Hey, good old Rob.
Rob LaBelle. And he's got the hair down his neck. I love it. And Oxalon basically says, we've determined that, you know, none of these people are hostile. So they were treated for their injuries. They're back on the shuttle. Yep. And you're free to go.
Yeah.
And Neelix is definitely flirty in this scene. You can tell there's some chemistry because he says, well, you know, now that everything's cleared up, maybe we could just talk. And then you look from Oxalon over to Dexa and you say, you know, get to know each other a little. Very flirty, Ethan. Very.
Okay. I did not read it as that, but okay. But you saw a little flirtation, little hints of flirtation.
I saw flirtation for sure.
But Neelix does say, okay, we can have this chat, but can my friends come too? And Oxalon's like, no, we don't trust outsiders like that. So again, another reference to your friends, and maybe that pulled on Robbie's heartstrings again, possibly.
Right.
It did.
But it also points out how Talaxians are very, very sensitive because of their past. They don't like anybody.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big part of this episode. This is a refugee colony, really. They're on the run trying to rebuild.
They were the people like me who were on Rhinax, I guess it was.
The Metreon Cascade was
when Jatrell did that. Yeah.
It's a walk and talk through these caves and tunnels. Lots of Talaxian extras. Do you remember, Ethan, all those Talaxian extras and the makeup? Do you remember the process of seeing all these other Talaxians getting made up or any of that?
No, they did it in a separate trailer. I didn't see them being made up. But the first time I saw them was when they arrived on the set. And it was kind of mind-blowing, you know? I've been the only one, except for Fairtrade, that I could remember.
And now you got 50 of them running around.
And now there's 50 of them. And of course, if you look at the makeup, it's not as fine as mine.
Yeah,
you know, right. It's they had to skip corners and stuff like that, but you couldn't tell from.
I'll be honest, Ethan. I think I saw one scene where someone crossed camera very quickly, but they only had the hair. It seemed like they only had the Talaxian hair and a little bit of
no makeup.
Like a little bit. Well, they had a little, smudge on their face. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they just painted up the face and didn't put on a prosthetic. And he crossed the scene. Oh, he crossed camera, and I go, that guy doesn't even have. Oh my god! So again,
oh my god!
Wow! I wouldn't be surprised because it's very time consuming and expensive.
Yeah,
put all that stuff on.
Exactly, it costs a lot of money
for sure.
I mean, did they possibly cast 50 heads? I don't know if they went. They wouldn't have done that.
There's no
way.
They
probably used old heads that we had and glued them on and then just patched them up. And
that's why they called Rob LaBelle back all the time, because they had his mold. And they were like, we had his mold.
I didn't think
again.
Of that.
Yeah,
that's it. Of course, that makes sense.
They save money big time. Yeah.
You're walking through these caves. You see a lot of technology and you ask where to come from. And they said, well, we had these ships. We dismantled some of our ships, disassembled them. Yes, five of the six. So there's only one ship left.
Right.
They've used all those components to build these pods for quarters and energy systems, geothermal energy that they use, providing oxygen and water for them.
So they're all set up.
Yeah, you go deeper in the cave. You talk about how Rack seems to be a great kid and ask about his father. And you learn that his father's dead. It's a sad moment. This is a moment I wish had been played in close-ups. It's kind of played a little in a wide shot and it blows by quick. Like, you learn that he's dead. Mm-hmm. You say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. And she says, no, it's okay. You didn't mean to. And I don't know. There's some moments in this episode. Maybe because I wanted to live in that emotion in a close-up. And I know there's tons of emotion in this episode.
Right.
There's some moments I felt were lost. This was one that I feel like you could have connected over the death of her husband and your empathy a little more. Yeah.
I would never be aware of that as an actor. We need to close. That would never even enter my mind.
And that shouldn't even be your job, though. That's not your job, you know, to do that. Hey, can I just rewind a little bit to the scene when he's in the back where he's in bed? What was that thing?
I forgot about the Band-Aid.
Head? Was that a Band-Aid?
It looks like a kid's Band-Aid. When she first wakes you up.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, don't worry. You got a little injury on your head, but it's not a big deal. She's
healing. Did he put a Band-Aid on me?
Yeah, it's like a round, like you circular. Buy from, like, you know, CVS Pharmacy or something, a box of Band-Aids.
But it almost looked like it had little kid characters on it. Like it was like a lighter colored, like a child's Band-Aid. I'm like, what is
that? Well, they wouldn't have the kind of medical equipment that we had.
No.
So they would have to rely probably on things like that.
Yeah.
And that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had a Band-Aid for a while, but then the Band-Aid comes off, thank God, because it looked goofy to me on your head.
It was a little weird. So after the walk and talk, after you find out that that she is now a widow, now you finally make it to the Delta Flyer. And interestingly enough, Dexa doesn't say a word in here because she does not trust the human or the Vulcan that are already in the shuttle making reparations there. So there's a little bit of chatter between Neelix and Paris, and Tuvok says a couple things, and she just leaves. She's gone.
Right.
She isn't,
Right.
And then Paris asks, you know, how did it go? And this is the scene where I literally started tearing up, because Paris says, how did it go? And you played this beautifully. The disappointment with, you say, I guess my expectations were a little high about meeting all these Talaxians. And Tuvok even says, well, I regret that you didn't have a more fulfilling experience. And he was very sincere. For Tuvok to say that, it felt like Paris and Tuvok and Neelix were all playing a sense of disappointment and sadness that was also about Ethan Phillips' last episode. Like, well, I felt that very strongly.
That actually came through as well in the
episode. I felt that through the whole show, but I think in the moments when I was acting with you guys, I think it was just an awareness constantly through that.
Yeah,
you know,
I saw it as I watched it. I interpreted that.
Robbie, I remember being aware of that through the whole filming of that episode. That
like every time, this is the last time I'm going to be in the Delta Flyer set. This is the last time I'm going to be in this cave set. I felt it very much. And I felt it from
all 22 episodes
a
year for 7 years. I mean, it was a huge bulk of your life.
Can I ask you, Ethan, how did they tell you? Do you remember how they told you that this was going to be your last episode?
Ken Biller came down to my trailer to tell me. I was more relieved to find out that I had a scene in the final episode with Seven on the phone.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
So there you go,
that's what
Robbie.
Garrett said before we started. He said, I think Neelix is in the finale. And I am. Oh, okay.
I came in one day and I had a phone conversation or whatever kind of thing we had with Seven.
Yeah.
So I was really relieved to find that I would be in the final episode.
So Ken Biller came to your trailer to tell you that this would be your last big story, but you'd have a scene in the finale. I remember you're the one that told me. I remember you coming up before we had gotten the scripts or anything. And you said, hey, I just, you know, I had talked to, the writers. Ken came down. I didn't remember all the detail, but I distinctly remember when you told me, and I was like, what? How can you be leaving? I was blown away that you were not going to be in every episode with us all the way to the end.
Right.
But in reality, guys, after this, there's one more and then the season finale. So there really wasn't, it wasn't like Ethan
wasn't
left
like much
first episode of the season. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Wasn't much left. You just got some time off much before your last scene in the final episode.
Yeah.
We're in the flyer. There's this nice emotional kind of moment of disappointment from Neelix that he didn't really bond with these Talaxians.
Right.
It wasn't what he expected. And then there's an alert that internal sensors are working because we get the power turned back on the shuttle. Neelix and Tuvok go to the back, and they come through the door in the dark backside of the shuttle, and Neelix is scanning, and then Neelix points his finger like to Tuvok. You tap Tuvok on the shoulder and you go like this, like pointing where it's coming from.
Yeah.
It was so great. The two of you shoulder to shoulder with you scanning and pointing towards the closet. And then as he heads to the closet, you flicked on a light switch or something.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. Switches. It wasn't Neelix. It was Tuvok. So Tuvok turns on his Sims beacon and he just brings it like right over. I don't know why he's. Oh no, he had it because he was working. So yeah. So right. He brings it over, but then, and shines it right on the kid.
And then the lights come on in the hole. So they discover him in the dark. Tuvok discovers him, but then the lights come on, and I was like, why didn't they just turn the lights on in the beginning?
To begin with, anyway.
But it's if there's a light switch, just hit the light switch before you go in the dark room.
Okay, I know. And then that's what you found funny. But what I found funny was, if you remember, Robbie, in Friendship 1, where was the alien hiding that knocked me out cold?
In the
exact same place. Exact same place that Brax is hiding. So that
we
got to
put a lock on that closet door.
Or anytime we have intruder alert, like we did in this scene, someone should say they're hiding in the back of the closet. It's always the back of the closet.
Brax got on the Delta Flyer.
Yes, it was Brax.
That was Brax, the little boy. He's there.
Yep.
He was the one I bonded with the most of all of them.
Yeah.
Initially.
Yeah, you really bonded. And he's afraid he's going to get in trouble. And again, Neelix says, because Brax says, you won't tell her I was here, will you? And Neelix says, here? I have no idea what you're talking about. So,
so he's covering for the kid over and over again here.
Right. Over and over.
We're back into the kind of the caves of the asteroid. And there's a conversation between Oxalon and Nakona. And Oxalon just says, like, look, that's just not enough time for us to dismantle all of our equipment. And now we find out that Nakona wants all the Talaxians to leave, to vacate this asteroid.
Yeah.
And the issue is they've already taken apart 5 of their 6 ships. They don't even have, they have 1 ship left. That's enough to take the people, but not the equipment. So there's some major issues here. And Dexa steps up. Dexa stands up and says, look, you can't take us, you can't make us move. This is our home. And then that's when Dexa kind of gets manhandled by
Manhandled. Yeah. And Neelix is coming in just at that moment with Brax. Mm-hmm. And Brax says, you know, leave her alone.
Yeah.
And throws a rock at Nakona.
Yeah.
And Nakona. Right. And then Nakona's pissed off and he says, get me that boy.
Yeah.
And Neelix steps in front. Neelix says, do not touch him.
Yeah.
And then they start to get into a little shoving match. Well, and Neelix, he does the classic Kirk double fisted boom on the neck. Do you remember that? You were a hero.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Okay. Let me paint the picture to you. So as you say, you're not going to touch this kid. Nakona sends his henchman over. He's like, why? You going to do something about it? I mean, whatever his line was this classic bully line. And he shoves you to the side. Okay. You fall down. As he starts going towards Brax, you then run and tackle him. Okay. And all I could think about was our conversations about how much you love football when you were younger. Yeah, and I was like, oh, here's Ethan doing all his football moves right here. Yeah. He's offensive line right now. You tackle him. You knock him to the side, you grab his weapon off of him, and you aim it at the boss man, Nakona, who's about to draw on you. So you are an absolute hero in this scene.
You saved the kid,
knocked the guy, the aliens around like they're nothing. I mean, you were the man.
You were the man, but I think it all comes down to the Kirk.
Oh, yes. And the double, excuse me. Yes. Sorry. So, yes, after the tackle, then you double fist him with the, like that. And I'm sure this was a Dennis Matlone special. I'm sure Dennis told you.
That was the move.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to have you double fist him just like Kirk does. And you did it. So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was very heroic.
Wow.
It was.
I have to say, I'm very proud of myself.
You should be.
And you basically, because of this, they agree to give him 3 more days. It's what they were asking. So you got them to give in, and they're going to give him 3 days because they didn't have enough time to get out like right now.
Why do they want them gone? So they can mine the asteroid, asteroid?
Yeah, because they said the minerals they're searching for in this entire asteroid field, 30% of that mineral is located in the asteroid that the Talaxians are living in. So 1/3 of what they need for their quota is sitting in that asteroid.
Yeah, so they got to get out of there.
Yeah. Okay. The conversation goes to about fighting back. And Oxalon's like, fighting has never done anything. It just causes more trouble. And then Neelix agrees with that. So then Dexa says, well, then how are we going to, you know, what are we going to do about this? And Neelix says, I can talk to my captain. Maybe she can negotiate with the miners. And then she, then Neelix says, yeah, you should come to Voyager. You should talk to her yourself. And Brax quickly jumps, you know, into the conversation. I want to go too. And Dexla tries to shush him up. But Neelix says, no, you both should come. I've seen your home already. Time to mm-hmm. see mine. So
I remember that. I remember that.
Mm-hmm. Good scene, though.
Yeah, great scene. Yeah. We go to space. I just made a note. These space shots keep getting better and cooler. Like,
well,
I'm
with the asteroids in the background. It looked amazing. It looked amazing seeing Voyager. So
you mean as it progressed through seven seasons?
In the early seasons, they just used the same seven model shots.
Either
it flew this way or it flew that way.
Right.
But now they're using CGI and adding these layers, and it's just beautiful. We finally are looking really cinematic in a way that our opening credits look very cinematic.
So we're on the bridge right now, and Neelix is bringing in both Dexa and Brax to introduce them to the characters on the bridge. So Chakotay is there. Neelix turns to Harry and says, and this is Ensign Kim. And all I could hear was you saying, and this is Annie Kimmy. And then, which is Ethan's nickname for me. Annie Kimmy.
I call him Annie Kimmy. He called me Neely.
Neely. So then Brax asks, what's that? And Neely says, well, that's the engineering station. There's tactical. And this is the captain's chair. And then that's when Brax says to you, which station is yours? And then Neelix does a little bit of a backtrack.
Sort of awkward moment.
Because he's like, well, I don't have a specific, I'm more of a. And while Neelix is floundering, it cuts to Kim and Chakotay standing off to the side. And Kim knows what's going on. So he's like, let's go. So Kim walks over and says, Neelix does too many things to have just one station. He's our ambassador, morale officer. Chakotay jumps in, trade negotiator. Without a doubt, he's the most versatile member of our crew. And then back on Neelix's face, very appreciative of both Chakotay.
And then I
started getting tearing up at that point too. I was like, oh,
that's so beautiful.
This is getting
me. That's what I'm saying. I felt like what you were playing was, this is Ethan Phillips' last episode, and he has done so much in our cast.
Yeah.
He's not just been Neelix. He's been all these other things in our lives.
Yeah.
He means more to us than... just a simple title.
Right.
And that's the moments that were so authentic, that were so much richer than just the words we were saying.
The underlying layers of, we all knew that this was our send off to you in a way, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So we all added a little extra zhuzh into our performances and just of our general feeling towards you as our friend. Yeah.
Holy geez.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
That's so nice.
It was beautiful. It was really a beautiful moment.
Yeah. So now we're in Astrometrics, and Neelix is there. He's got Dexa and Brax there. And we've got this amazing image on screen. And it is basically of Talix, their home planet. And, you know, the question was, wow, your sensors reached that far away? And no, this is from our database. But still, it's a beautiful image of the Talaxian home world. And this is the bonding scene a little bit between Neelix and Dexa. Yes. They further bond because Neelix starts talking about the Godo mountain range. Dexa says, oh, the Oxiana Lakes. That's one of my favorite
places.
They're
reminiscing over the
reminiscing
beauty
about
of
their home planet.
Bonding over this home planet.
This is amazing.
It was good.
It's really
beautiful. This is amazing. Yep. I forgot that.
Yeah. Little Brax says, well, why don't we just go back to Talix? We could live there. And Dexa says, well, it's still controlled by the Haconians. They don't treat Talaxians well. That's why we left. Then Brax says, maybe Neelix could go with us and we could fight them. We could take the planet back. And Neelix
really believes in you.
Yeah, he does, man.
Really believe.
Well, you fought off that miner. So he thinks, all right. He thinks the world of
this is
already
great. Yeah.
So good. So good.
Oh, this is terrific. It's better than watching it.
Yeah. We're giving you the play-by-play. But Neelix says, well, if tomorrow's negotiations go well, you won't have to go anywhere. You can stay in your home in the asteroid that you've already built. We jump over to the corridor.
There is
a bit of a walk and talk with Neelix, and he's got Dexa and Brax with him. And he's saying, next stop, engineering. So he's about to show him engineering. Brax is excited, the warp core. But this is when Naomi sort of shows up. She pops in
Another kid.
Yeah. Scarlet. Yep. And that's when Neelix says, oh my gosh, Naomi, I forgot about our Catascot game. Naomi's like, no, that's all right. I just want to meet your friends. Neelix introduces Dexa and Brax to his goddaughter, Naomi. And Naomi basically says, hey, I'm going to go off to this holo program that Lieutenant Paris has just, you know, designed. It's called the Ninth Invaders from the Ninth Dimension. And Neelix says, ooh, that sounds scary. And Naomi is like, yeah, it's very. But she convinces Brax that he should come to the holodeck with him. And Mom says it's okay, and they take off. Dexa says, you're lucky to have found these people. They obviously think a great deal of you. And Neelix
says that to me.
Dexa says that because she notices, you know, how,
you know,
how,
the kid thinks Neelix is awesome. Bridge, Harry and Chakotay, everybody's bragging about Neelix to Dexa and Brax. Do you remember seeing Ethan Scarlet grow up? Because in this episode for me, I was like, wow, she grew up on our show. Cause she was on, you know, five seasons of our show, maybe.
I don't recall that, but you know how you don't recall people growing up when you're living with them, you know?
That's correct, because you don't see the change.
I don't see the change, but I do remember seeing her in Las Vegas many years after that.
Yes,
and
that
she was
one
a
time.
Young woman.
Yeah, she was a lady.
And I was like, oh, I can't believe you're the little girl who played my friend, you know?
Yeah, my goddaughter, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, oh, I feel like when we brought her on, she was 6 or 7 years old.
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And when she left the show, she was 10 or 12, you know, whatever the, she was maybe 7 or 8, 8 to 12, 7 to 11, whatever the number is.
Yeah.
It's a time where you go from a little kid to a tween. And that,
then
I noticed
it with Missy Gold and Benson. Cause when I started Benson, Missy was 9 or 10. And when I ended, she was a young teenager.
Mm-hmm,
and I remember, my goodness, we've been at this a while.
Yeah.
I felt it was Scarlet in this episode for sure.
So now we're in Dexa's quarters, I think, because we've given them some quarters.
Yeah,
right?
It's like we've given them some guest quarters.
Guest quarters.
Dark. It's very romantic.
Yeah. Neelix pours a drink for Dexa and himself.
Why not? Mm-hmm.
Yes. Why not? But this is where we learn about what happened to her husband. So we find out that they had occupied a certain planet, and the people that were already there said, oh, you newcomers need to live here. And it's a very tiny, tiny space and not enough land to farm, at least to feed all the Talaxians. And at this point, I guess there's 500 or 600 of them, right? So it's not enough space. So Dex's husband decides to kind of go against regulations, and he starts farming outside of the zone that they were allocated. And that's when a security detail came to question him, and a scuffle happened, and that's when he died.
He died.
And I got to say right now, all of the choices made by the actress that played Dexa, I really liked her choices, because I think a lot of actors, when they say, like, you know, he was killed, because here's the line. She goes, a security patrol confronted him. He told them he had to provide for his family, that he wasn't afraid of them. There was a fight. He was killed. I think a lot of actors will take a pregnant pause in that end part where they'll be like, there was a fight and he was killed. Like they try to milk it for too much. She just, man, the way very authentic, very matter of fact. She was sort of like, she goes like, she wasn't afraid of him. There was a fight. He was killed. And it was just quick. And it just the way all her choices, I thought, you know, they were good. I thumbs up everything on her. So
she was great. You guys were both great. A really sweet scene. And you can see, you know, she's very grateful. She says, even if this all doesn't work, thank you for trying.
It looks like they're about to kiss at the end of this scene, right?
Does.
Neelix comes in a little bit. She comes in a little bit. And then Neelix backs off. He's like, I should get a good night's sleep if I'm going to be at my best at negotiations tomorrow. So for me, as an audience member, I was like, kiss her. Oh, okay, that's fine.
But that's a nice tease, because you can see where it's going now.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah.
We're jumping into the briefing room. And now here's the meeting. And we've got Nakona there. Janeway's there. Neelix is there. And, you know, the conversation sort of talks about, Neelix suggests, look, would you be open to some type of compensation if they can't mine that asteroid to get to that 30% of those minerals? And he's like, well, what kind of compensation? He's like, well, they have a lot of geothermal energy that they're producing from that asteroid. They could possibly share it with you to help power your ships. Nakona's like, no, this energy, it's not compatible with our technology. And Janeway says, look, we can help you make modifications. And Nakona's like, no, we have quotas to meet. We don't have time for that. And so Janeway basically says, Commander, Mr. Dacona, the future of more than 500 people here is at stake. It's not like there's two settlers on this asteroid. This is a whole colony of Talaxians. There's no resolution here. We cut out of this scene to the mess hall. There's a game of Catascot going on between
Naomi and Brax. Naomi are there. Brax,
yeah,
Dex is watching. Mm-hmm. And I want to say, by the way, do they make Catascot games that we can buy on eBay or something? I want to get a Catascot game because Neelix has talked about Catascot and Naomi for years now, seasons on this show.
Yeah, we know what
somebody
it looks
had
like.
To make one.
We know what the Catascot game looks like, but I don't even think we even know the real rules to it. Like we could make it up and then you know.
I was made up by the show, right?
Yeah, yeah, but
they made up a name, and then the props guys made up a prop.
Oh, they did. Yeah.
I don't know what the rules are, but somebody has. I'm sure there's a fan that has figured out how Catascot is played.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, I want to learn Catascot. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's a nice gesture. I mean, I don't think you have to learn it, though, Robbie. I think you'd find that it's a little too complicated.
Too hard for me, think?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I think at your age, you might want to stick more to checkers, something like that.
Yeah, Tom Paris, you're just too lowbrow. I don't know if you get
For you, checkers is great for you.
Right, for what you need, it would be perfect.
For what I need, for what I need, checkers is just plenty.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to 7 years of Robbie McNeil and Ethan Phillips chatting at each other.
Yeah.
Right here. This is the perfect example.
All you need is a game of checkers. That's all you need. For you,
okay,
you'll be set.
But the point of this scene is that Dexa says, I knew it wouldn't work, talking about the negotiations.
Yeah.
Neelix says, well, we did get a small concession. They've extended the deadline. You'll have enough time to dismantle your equipment. And Dexa's pretty much crestfallen. She goes, oh, well, thanks. But there's just too much to even take with us. So Neelix says, well, Captain Janeway has agreed to ferry all of you and your supplies to the nearest M-class planet. And that's when Dexa, again, still very crestfallen, turns to Brax and says, let's go. We're going home. Brax is not happy. Why? Dexa says, we have to pack. Come on. And Brax turns to Neelix and says, you said you were going to help us. And then they leave. And so this sort of leaves it, it's hanging there and not sitting well with Neelix that they're going to
They all
to
leave.
Move.
Neelix is in the middle of the mess hall. And I have to comment on the way this was shot.
Okay.
So we're in some great close-ups, really emotional moments here.
Yeah.
And then as they leave, there's this kind of bumpy pullback off of Neelix's reaction, just watching them go. And the shot pulls back and it's a little bumpy. They must have been zooming out as they dollied back.
Okay.
And I wish they had stayed close on Neelix. In fact, I wish they had pushed in on
Neelix. On Neelix. Don't pull off of him.
Yeah. It was pulling back and pulling back. I was like, why are we pulling back? It's losing the emotional weight of this moment.
Yeah.
So that was a moment I wish photographically had been approached differently.
I think for LeVar, he wanted to set thematically, he wanted to stay the same. There's a lot of movement in a lot of his shots here. And he kept thinking, okay, I got to keep it moving. And he wasn't thinking that, hey, settling in and tighter on Neelix would have been even more effective. Yeah. Good catch.
Amazing.
Yeah. Okay. We go to the Astrometrics lab next. We're in Astrometrics with Neelix and Tuvok are in there. And Neelix says he's detected 5 warp-capable species within 2 light years of the planet that they're taking the Talaxians to. So they could be vulnerable to attack.
More attacks.
If you take the Talaxians to this M-class planet, there's 5 other people around there that might come in and take them out. Right. So Neelix is worried.
Yeah.
And this scene is basically where Tuvok, for the first time in our series, kind of goes, well, I have an idea, hypothetically. So he's literally, Tuvok is planting the seed. Well, hypothetically, they need a leader. And hypothetically, they could defend themselves if they had a leader. And he's like leading Neelix, like he's bolstering Neelix to become the hero. Because Tuvok's saying, look, I can't do this because of the prime directive. We can't do this. We can't get involved.
Right.
But you're not technically in Starfleet. You could get involved.
Right. And I just love how Neelix jumps on that. Hypothetically, if they wanted to defend the asteroid, how would they do it? Tuvok says, well, hypothetically, to begin with, they would have to establish some kind of perimeter. You mean shields? Yes. The miners are monitoring the asteroid. So if they detected Talaxians erecting a shield, they would attempt to stop them. And it's, again, it's all this, like, hypothetically, you should do this. So Tuvok is giving you advice to
giving
go against
you a plan
the Prime Directive
to build a shield around the asteroid.
Yeah.
He's telling you what to do, but you've got to do it. He can't do it.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
It's great. Yeah.
But Neelix is very doubtful of himself, right? So Neelix says, I couldn't lead those people, Mr. Tuvok. I'm not a fighter. I'm just a cook who sometimes imagines himself to be a diplomat. So very self-deprecating comment.
Yeah, well,
there.
I'm catching the vibe from Dexa there, who's crestfallen. And
exactly. So you're believing it. Yeah, you're throwing out exactly that same sort of, you know, depression.
Kindness
and sort
leads
of, yes.
to kindness. Mm-hmm. Negativity leads to negativity.
Right. But then Tuvok, Tim Russ, of course, being so close to you as well at the time. And he says, on the contrary, Mr. Neelix, you are much more than that. You are perhaps the most resourceful individual I have ever known. And then you say, I always thought you just tolerated me. Tuvok's like, you do have some annoying habits. However, during your time on Voyager, you've developed many valuable skills that would serve you well if you ever decided to assume a leadership role. Neelix is like, you really think so? Let me be clear. I'm not urging you to do anything. I'm simply telling you that I believe that you are more than capable. So another scene where Neelix is just like, on the platform, he's the best. It's like, it's a good scene.
Great scene. Great scene. We cut into the corridor. Neelix is heading to begin
the defense of the asteroid.
Defense of the asteroid. And Janeway catches up to him. And now Janeway's chasing Neelix down the hall.
Yeah.
I've never seen Neelix, who always plays, he's got a crush on Janeway.
Yes.
And he's,
and
now
Neelix
Janeway's
chases Janeway.
Chasing.
Yeah. Janeway's chasing Neelix down. Yep. And I love
Janeway's
how she goes,
chasing him down.
She goes, you wouldn't be planning anything foolish, would you? So she's already, you know, she's kind of like, she's thinking something's going about to happen because Neelix is walking with, I mean, there's a lot of intent in your walk down this corridor. Your hero
he's going
march.
To see, he's going to talk to his friends and they stop and they do talk. And Neelix says, I know there's prime directive issues for you guys to help, but I'm not officially part of this crew. I can do something. And then Janeway says, well, you're as much a part of this crew as anyone else. And Neelix says, are you ordering me not to go? And she says, that depends on what you're going to do. Oh, and he says, well, that's up to the Talaxians. And she wishes you a safe journey.
Yeah. So she knows what's going to happen. She knows.
Everybody is encouraging, not just for you to take risks or whatever, but they're encouraging Neelix to believe in himself.
Yeah. Right.
That he can rise to this occasion.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Everybody is. Chakotay and Harry on the bridge.
Yep.
Tuvok in the astrometrics. Mm-hmm.
Janeway in the corridor. Everybody. Yeah. It just,
everybody's encouraging him. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was just a junk dealer, you know, although, I mean, he was the guy who hid out when they attacked his planet.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
He's not the bravest guy in the world.
No.
But we're beginning to see that he's changing.
Yes.
And stepping up to the plate. I like that a lot.
Yeah. That's great.
And I think it even began earlier than this because, you know, that episode where Neelix and Tuvok, Rise.
That was exactly. called Rise. There was an incredible scene in that between me and Tuvok where I call him out.
Yeah.
And tell him, you know, he's got to cut this horse shit and treat me more like an equal and everything.
That's right.
And I don't know if they were referencing that or that impacted their thought.
I think that was the beginning of them going like, wow, he could command. He could do something big. So, for sure.
We go back down to the asteroid. We're in a public area, the big open area.
Yeah.
Which was probably around our cave set. Mm-hmm. Right. And Neelix is up addressing a crowd. And I just want to say, the way that you're up a couple steps higher and they're down low, it looked like the Wizard of Oz and the Munchkins to me. You looked really tall, and all these Talaxians looked like Munchkins and the Wizard of Oz down gathered around looking at you. But it was a great shot.
Oh my God.
It was great.
It's a powerful scene because
you
give them the Yeah, you pitch
you pitch this idea. Defense shield. We could do this. We could build this defense shield. Dexa jumps on. Well, yeah, maybe you're right. We could reroute power from the core. And so, you know, you're starting to spitball ideas with the crowd. You end up saying, you know, isn't this place worth defending? And you've you've rallied the crowd here to defend this asteroid.
So now we're in a staging area getting ready for the mission. And Neelix is like, wait for my comm call. As soon as the last emitter is in place, start routing power to the grid. Dex is like, understood. And then Neelix says, you're scared, aren't you? Dexa says, you? And Neelix says, terrified. And then Dex is like, be careful. So again, it's still, you're still.
They're really, you know, bonding.
You're bonding.
This is where she touches him. I don't know if you noticed, but when she says, be careful, she sort of grabbed his arm.
His arm.
Grabs your arm and holds on to it. And he says, I will. And then Oxalon calls, says, we're ready. Mm-hmm. And Neelix turns back. I'll see you soon. He starts to leave. He's starting to leave. But then she pulls him back in.
You back and kisses you here. So you guys have
finally,
a kiss scene.
Yeah. There's a kiss before you're going into battle. Do you remember kissing with Talaxian makeup on? Do you remember it?
Do you remember the kiss?
I don't. No. I don't.
That's okay.
I remember kissing Kes.
With the Talaxian makeup.
With the Talaxian makeup. But
was it awkward? Did you have to think about like, oh, my ridges, my
Well, you do have to be careful because it's the reason I could never speak on the phone when I was doing this show because it would stick to the phone. And I could never sleep because it would crush the wig and all that stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if they maybe put a little powder on it or something.
So it didn't
to keep it
rub
because
off
the two makeups could easily stick.
Okay. Now that you've said that, Robbie, that now makes sense of why I was on the phone in Ethan's trailer, because he can't put the phone up to his ear. I forgot about that. And that's his number one rule. He can never do that because it's going to mess up the makeup. So I was actually talking on the phone for him. That's why.
I couldn't even read because of the contact lenses.
But your teeth, though, I mean, you could still speak.
I could speak with the teeth,
It was no problem, right? That didn't ever encumber you.
But to this day, when I'm working and they go action, I go, I don't need my teeth.
You search for the teeth to this day?
Every scene I do since 2001, every show I've ever been in.
You're on Avenue 5 doing this, and then the director's like, Ethan, what is this? What are you doing?
So ingrained.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I love that story, though. Yeah. Thank you.
Now we go into our action sequence. Neelix's ship is flying. I love that his ship is back out in space, by the way, that we've been carrying Neelix's ship from the pilot.
I remember
in our cargo bay.
You know what's crazy? Since we haven't seen the ship, I always thought your ship was more vertical in orientation, but it is a horizontal
pilot. You don't see it in the pilot?
No, we did.
Well, I think we did.
I thought it looked different because we haven't seen it for so long. But what I love about your ship, though, and also the other Talaxian vessel, is that your afterburners it's this light blue. It's this baby blue, like UCLA blue color. So I'm like, So I was very, very happy to see that.
Small
detail.
Yeah. Neelix is flying. The Oxalon's flying in Oxalon's ship, the other Talaxian ship. They're dropping these emitters around the asteroid to create this net that will cover the whole thing in a shield that will protect them. So we see out in space, Neelix says two more to go and we're done. So they've already been dropping these emitters around the asteroid. Oxalon says we're moving in position for the next one. And suddenly the miner ship shows up and they're on an intercept course. So we see Neelix doing some evasive maneuvers out in space. It was very, very good flying, by the way.
Thank you for coming from you.
Yes, the piloting is, you know, for what you need, it's perfect, ship and your skills. It's for what you need.
What I needed, it was,
God, it was perfect. The miner ship is coming in on an intercept course. So Neelix decides to go help them. He says, I'll deal with them. Just focus on your job. And Neelix says to himself, all right, Mr. Vulcan, let's see if you're right about me. I love that. He says that.
To himself.
We go inside the control center. There's an explosion because these miners are, you don't have the force field up yet to protect this place. So they're able to drop
dropping a bunch of
bombs.
Yeah. And they try to drop one, a charge onto Neelix's ship, but that explodes right before it hits your ship. Because I think you were trying to just kind of catch it with your shield so it wouldn't hit the planet. But it explodes before it even gets close to your ship. And you hear Janeway say, "Delta Flyer to Neelix, are you all right?" So she's the one that shot it down. And Neelix says, "Fine, Captain, but you shouldn't be here." And then I love it how Janeway says, "We're just helping a friend in distress." Even though Neelix says, "You're violating the Prime Directive." She goes, "Nope, mm-hmm. we're just helping a friend in distress," which was a nice little line. So we have a little assistance from Janeway. Wow. Yeah. And then that's when the shield.
Yeah, they finally have all the emitters in place. Right. And goes they online. Bring.
So we're protected now. They're all protected.
Yeah. And the rest of the charges fall harmlessly on the shield grid and explode. So nothing on the on the asteroid. So you did the job, my friend. You did it. Yeah. Yeah. Dexter says, you did it off camera. And Neelix says, "We did it." So there's, again, a little bonding with Dexa, more bonding here.
So we've got a captain's log where we learn that the miners have given up all their attempts to penetrate the shields. They've given up. Talaxians are safe. And Voyager's getting ready to head home. Right. But she says, "We're going to give Mr. Neelix some time to say goodbye to his new friends." And we go to Dex's quarters and Oxalon's there. He says, "Thank you for everything you did." And Brax wants you to stay here. He begs you to stay here. And Dexa says, "He can't. He's got big responsibilities on Voyager. He's going to have to go back." And Neelix is his heart is breaking, but he leaves. To me, it was a bit of a cold goodbye. He's like, I can't get emotional.
He does say to the kid, he says, "I promise I will stay in touch as long as I can." Because it's the further away you get from that asteroid towards Earth, you're gonna lose communication, abilities. But he does say, I'll stay in touch as long as I can.
I'll try to stay in touch. And then there's no hugs or anything. I felt like Neelix couldn't deal with his emotions here.
He had to, at this point.
He probably would have had a breakdown.
We cut into Naomi Wildman's quarters. There's a great opening shot of toys on her desk. Mm-hmm. And she's at her computer doing homework for Commander Chakotay's paleontology class.
Yeah.
And I was like, "What? Chakotay teaches?" Neelix offers to help her, but she's like, "No, I'm good. I'm almost finished."
Oh, yeah. She doesn't need me.
She doesn't need you.
Yeah.
And Neelix says, "Hey, after you're done, you want to play Catascot?" She goes, "Nah, I got to get up early." And
How about a bedtime story? She's like, "No, I mean, you haven't done that in years." He's like, "Well, but think of all the stories you've missed." She's like, "No, thanks, Neelix, but I can put myself to bed. I'm not a little girl anymore." Right. I know she says that, Robbie, but to me, I'm looking at her going, "You're still a little girl to me." She's still tiny. Okay?
To me, to me, when she said that, that's when it hit me that she's grown. She has, not just in the story, but I can see physically? The actress going from 7 to 11 years old. That's a big change.
She still looks tiny to me. But the importance of this scene is she's saying to you, it's okay, basically. You know what I'm saying? You know from this scene that if you were to leave Voyager, she's going to be in good hands. She doesn't have to have you to be her godfather anymore. Right. So each scene that comes on, that happens after from this scene on is basically more validation for you to go, I can leave. I can be with the Talaxians now, right?
Great scene. We go to the mess hall. It's a dark mess hall. He's coming back to the kitchen feeling kind of lost a bit. Naomi doesn't need him anymore.
Yeah.
And there's a great reveal of, as he pulls a pot or something away, of Janeway sitting in the dark mess hall. He didn't see her. Yeah. This is the turning point because she starts with, "Oh, I didn't think anybody else stayed up as late as me."
I remember that line. Yep.
Yeah.
Really?
That line. Yep.
And you respond with, "I wouldn't want you to have coffee all by yourself." Janeway says, "Have a seat." Mm-hmm. And then you say that you have been thinking about something. It's hard for you to put into words, and you wouldn't ignore your responsibilities in Voyager. You say, "I take them very seriously." Janeway says, "I know you do. I've been thinking about something too. Maybe you could help me." Neelix says, "I'd be happy to." Janeway says, "It's an idea I need to talk to Starfleet Command about." Neelix says, "Well, it must be important." She says, "Well, it is. Now that we've established two-way communication with Earth, it seems to me that Starfleet could use a permanent ambassador in the Delta Quadrant. This ambassador would have to stay in frequent contact with Voyager." Neelix is like, "Certainly." And Janeway says, "It would be difficult for me to run this ship without you, but that might be a sacrifice I'd be willing to make for the greater good of Starfleet. Of course, the assignment would be entirely voluntary. You wouldn't be interested, would you?" And when she said that line, Robbie, I thought she was going to start crying. I really did. I was like, Kate's going to start crying because you could see like she's basically also saying, I give you permission to leave Voyager.
Right,
we'll be okay. We're going to miss you. But I swear to God, I saw the beginnings of a tear forming in Kate's eyes. Yes. It was like,
this scene was covered beautifully. The close-ups were nice and meaty and I was in your heads.
It was
really emotional.
Yeah.
In fact, you had one line in here where he says about his responsibilities on Voyager. You said, I take them very seriously.
Right.
And the reading of that line was so authentic. And I know it's not a big emotional line, but the truth you had with you take your responsibilities on this ship very seriously. She felt it. I loved the scene.
Yeah.
She gives you permission. We don't know if you're going to choose to take her offer to be the ambassador that stays behind.
Right.
But we cut outside in the hallway.
We see Neelix come out of the turbolift door. So it cuts from this really dark scene to a very lit scene because you come out of the turbolift doors and then you just, it's awesome because the shot is on you. Neelix just looks to the right, looks to the left, and is just shocked. And then as we reveal, it's every crew member.
We start pulling back with him.
Pull back. Yeah.
And he's walking by everybody.
Remember that. I'll never forget that.
Yep. Huge scene. You come around the corner. All the main players are there towards the end. But what was great, though, is as you're walking down, every single one of our regular background actors is there. Every single one. Every stand-in is there. All of our guys are there.
And there were, even if I remember correctly, there were even some crew members that had got dressed up in uniform.
I would have to look back, but I think you may be right.
I remember
that too.
The best boy or one, I can't remember who they were, but I remember seeing, oh my God, the focus puller is in Star Trek.
Is in a uniform. Yeah.
So I was only saying goodbye to the cast, I was saying goodbye to the crew.
To the crew too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That really punched it for me.
Mm-hmm.
Was this the last scene you shot? Did they shoot this?
Yeah. No, I shot 2 weeks later. I shot the scene with Seven.
But I mean, for this episode, did they save this to the end or did we shoot it and then you had to go back and do earlier scenes? Do you remember? I don't remember.
I want to say it was the last scene. I'm almost convinced it was. I think they saved it.
Yeah. That would have been smart if they scheduled it.
Yeah, I believe it was. I'd have to say I'm 75% sure it was.
And really, there's not much said here. You know what I'm saying?
Very
it's
little.
The walk, and it's Janeway saying, you know, goodbye and good luck, Ambassador Tuvok. And you didn't even say anything. You look at everyone, and as you're about to go, Tuvok says, Mr. Neelix. And then you turn around to look, and he does the little foot thing, right? And then he ends with, live long and prosper. And then that's it. And that's the end.
We see you go into the shuttle bay to your ship. We go into Dex's quarters. You put your bag down.
Brax
runs over to hug you.
Yeah.
Dexa joins you in a hug. And I have to say that last image, the three shot of her head on one side, Brax on the other with you in the middle.
That's great.
As it wrapped around and held that tableau of the three of you in tight.
It was great.
Beautifully framed, beautifully composed. A great last image of the episode.
Yep.
Super, super emotional.
Okay.
Great episode, Ethan.
All right.
Great episode.
Yeah. Robbie, I'm going to ask you, what is your lesson from this episode, Homestead?
I think the thing that I wrote down, there's so many lessons in it, but the thing that I wrote down is that sometimes doing what's best for yourself can be painful. Like, we may know we've got to do something. It's not going to be easy. It's going to hurt. But we have to do it. It is the right thing for us to do. You know, things are not always as clean as happy endings. This story has a happy ending and a sad ending. It's neither all one thing or the other. There's some pain involved, but Neelix is doing what's best for him. I believe he made the right decision. So that's my
I've always, always felt that when people have asked me over the years, do you regret having to leave the ship? And I said, it was the most logical. Not just logical, but it was a decision that was made with a full heart. It had to be. That's the only, it would have been ridiculous not to have stayed with them because I fell in love and I had a family and what am I going to do on Earth? You know?
Yeah. And your journey was complete, you know?
Yeah.
It was complete. Yeah. What you set out to do what you needed to do as a character and how you needed to grow and what you needed to learn about yourself as Neelix.
Right.
That was complete.
I wouldn't have been able to do it on any other season because I wasn't completed yet. But here I stepped up and put on my my big boy pants, if you will. It was a beautiful end to the arc.
Yeah. What about you, Garrett? What's your lesson?
Don't be afraid to find the courage to stand up for what's right. Yeah, because the whole, you know, being evicted from their home kind of issue. So
it's very heroic what he did. Yeah.
Everybody needs a pat on the back. I told you my story about Scott Pelley. You know the anchorman for CBS Evening News?
Yes.
He's now on 60 Minutes. I used to watch him religiously. And I was walking down 57th Street one day. This is when I was doing All the Way on Broadway. Mm-hmm. And I saw Scott Pelley. And I love Scott Pelley. I thought he was, since Walter Cronkite, he was my favorite guy. And I said, Mr. Pelley. And he turned and he looked at me. He said, I know you. I just saw you in All the Way last night. My goodness, how many characters did you play? And I went, oh, my goodness gracious. And we talked for a little bit. And then we stood in a 57th Street. We talked for like 2 or 3 minutes. And at the end, I said to him, you know, Mr. Pelley, he called me Scott. I said, Scott, when you sign off at night, we see that you care. We can see it in your eyes that you care. That's why I watch you. And Scott Pelley started brimming and gave me a big hug. I remember thinking, my God, everybody has to be told they're worthwhile.
Yeah. You're so right about that, man. Yeah. You're so right. It doesn't matter where they are in life, you know, how successful they are. Everyone needs that pat on the back.
This whole podcast has been a pat on the back to me. Your praise and your enjoyment of what I did, it really matters to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, you matter to us, so that's why we do this.
You guys matter to me, too.
Yeah. Thank you, brother. We love you. What is your rating of this episode? What are you going to give Homestead?
I can't tell if my rating is because of all the subtext that was going on or whatever, but I'm going to give this a 9.5. This is
nice.
And it's not a 10 because we got to say goodbye to Neelix.
Right. Yeah.
And so I'm not going to give that a 10, but I give this a 9.5. It hits on so many levels. This is a really successful episode for me.
Really good.
What about you, Garrett?
I'll join you. I'll give the same rating. 9.5? I'll join you for 9.5. Yeah.
Do you have a rating? What would you rate this?
Yeah, what would you rate this?
6.72. And I'll tell you why. I'm going to give it a 9.5. Why not?
All right. We're all 9.5s.
What is our Admirals and Captains group average rating for this episode? What do we have?
The Captain and Admiral average rating for Homestead is, they gave it an 8. Wow. That's pretty high.
That's good. Yeah,
it's usually between 6 high. And 7 for the most part.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, that is our recap and discussion with the lovely and talented Ethan Phillips joining us of Homestead.
Thank you,
everyone,
Ethan,
for being there. Yes. And
absolute pleasure to be here with you guys. Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
We loved it. And join us next week when Robbie and I will be discussing and recapping the episode Renaissance Man. For those of you who happen to be Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material and more Ethan Phillips goodness.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.